In a world filled with war, hate, suffering, and Justin Bieber, two guys fix it all with a battle about a movie. One film, two opinions, one coin, two sides. They feud. You decide. It's time for Film Feud.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Film Feud. Thanks for tuning in. My name is Vidur.
Hello, welcome to Film Feud. My name is Vikram.
And Vikram, why don't we start with just quickly running through what we're doing here?
We are selecting a movie from the IMDb Top 250, and then we're tossing a coin, assigning each other a side, and we are feuding over the said picture.
That's why we call it Film Feud.
We call it Film Feud?
Film Feud.
Oh, I thought this was picture argument. So we got Before Sunrise.
Yes, that's awesome.
Oh, you've seen it?
No, I haven't. But this is why I love this podcast, because I've been meaning to watch it for like 10 years, because Richard Linklater is one of my favs.
Oh, you're right. It is Linklater.
Yeah, it's one of his earlier movies. I think he made it right after Dazed and Confused and Slacker. And I know a lot about what the movie's about. You haven't watched it either, have you?
I have not seen it at all. I didn't even know. I'd forgotten that Dazed and Confused was Linklater as well, actually.
Oh, dude, Dazed and Confused is classic Linklater, and this became classic Linklater. So I'm pretty sure I know what it's about. It's basically about Ethan Hawke.
Hunt.
No, that's Tom Cruise.
Fool, yeah.
This is not a super spy agent. This is just a guy.
Right.
And he meets a French girl in Europe, and they spend a night together. And it's really interesting because Richard Linklater is kind of famous at this point for playing with the elements of time. You know, like all his movies kind of play with that a little bit. Like Dazed and Confused was shot over one night. Boyhood famously was shot over 12 years. And this movie also is just, it's like two characters just over one night somewhere in Europe. So that's what I know about the movie. And I've been meaning to watch it for a long time, so I'm excited.
Interesting. This should be fun.
Yeah, it should be great. And how the coin toss works for us feuders is that we toss the coin. In this episode, I will be the subject of the coin toss. And if it comes heads, then I argue for the movie. If it comes tails, I argue against the movie. Simple enough?
Let's do this.
And it's come heads. Well, you say right now because you haven't watched the movie. You don't know as much about it as I do. But I'm really excited right now because I know something about this movie that perhaps you didn't. That I know you didn't. That's getting me real excited.
Which is?
This movie is 100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
100%?
100%.
You're such a ratings whore, by the way.
I'm a ratings whore.
Yeah.
The whole point of this podcast is to discount ratings. But once the coin toss comes in my favor for a movie I know that I'm going to like because it's 100% and a director that I know I love, I think I get to be a little hard.
Okay, go for it. Just don't tell me about it, please. Thanks so much. All right, man. So, I'm excited to see the movie because from what you've explained to me, it sounds like an interesting concept and stuff. Let's see if he pulled it off well or not.
Are you being pro the movie right now? I'm so proud of you. You're growing as an individual.
No. I'm being pro the concept. I'm yet to have an opinion on the movie.
Of course. All right, let's figure it out. Let's go watch the movie.
Let's do this. I feel nothing. It's like I just spent like 2 hours staring at a screen and nothing changed. I got bored in parts.
What kind of a robot are you? This movie was like the smell of rain.
What?
The smell of new rain on grass. It was like a blue sky. It's so good. Them feels, bro. I have them feels.
I'm getting the smell of farts coming from your direction right now.
That's my bad, actually. I just ate a bunch of cookies.
Dude, I mean, I don't know. I don't even know what to talk about in this movie. It was so just bland.
It definitely was not bland, you f***ing emotionless automaton.
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 Wow.
This movie was the perfect capturing of what it's like to fall for someone. It was beautiful. And consistently, everybody, all the 100% of the reviewers on Rotten Tomatoes who love this movie agree with me. It's like the one thing you come off feeling after this movie is that it was just beautiful.
You know why I think this movie has 100% on Rotten Tomatoes? It's because
it's amazing.
No, it's because of reactions like that. It's tried to be so feel good. It touches upon romance in a way which is pure and sensual and so like dreamy, and that's why people are like just like blindly just voting 100% here.
All you just said right now is that the movie is considered good because it's good. Yes,
no,
I agree.
Not at all. It's just because it has those factors or tries to achieve those emotions doesn't mean it did. It did not for me.
What do you mean you didn't feel anything? Did you at least get this like warm and fuzzy feeling of watching these two new lovers become new lovers?
Well, firstly, Ethan Hawke felt like a robot in this movie. So the actress, I don't even know her name.
Julie,
we'll call her Julie. Julie was great.
Deply.
Yeah, we'll call her Julie. Julie was good. She felt natural and her lines sort of flowed. Her acting sort of flowed. Ethan Hawke was a f***ing robot in this movie. There were scenes when he did not blink for a minute straight while staring at her. That's an automaton for you right there.
He's not the robot. You're the robot. I doubt you ever loved someone if you didn't get the feeling of love. This is like watching the Titanic and not feeling sad for the people who are dying. That's the same thing as watching this movie and not feeling the warm and fuzzy love feeling.
I didn't feel sad for Leonardo DiCaprio when he was dying in that movie.
No, this is like watching Titanic and watching the guy who falls down the ship and then hits the propeller and then like goes and not being like, oh my God. That's the equivalent of the reaction you're having right now.
Absolutely not.
It is exactly like that.
Two different.
You have to be sick in the head and having never been loved by anybody in your life to feel the way you're feeling right now. It's disgusting.
It was a romantic movie, obviously, but it was
It was the best romantic movie I've ever seen in my life.
Calm down. Calm your tits. You're lactating right now. This movie was a romanticized romantic movie, if you know what I mean. It was so overkill. It just left a bad taste in my mouth. And there are two more of these?
Yeah, there's two more. I can't wait to watch them.
Go watch them, bro. Go watch them. Let me know how they were. Are they 100% as well on Rotten Tomatoes? Because pussies weren't able to vote against them?
Jesus. I actually think Before Midnight, the third one, which came out fairly recently, 20 years, I think, removed from the first one, is about 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. I might be a little mistaken there. It's definitely in the high 90s. Anyway, the point is, I think I have the world on my side. And
go take the world up your bum, bro. I don't give a shit. This movie sucked. It wasn't, you know what it was? It was a mediocre movie. It was a movie which I've seen once. I will never watch again. I don't completely mind spending 2 hours watching this, but it won't be a movie that I'll go back or recommend to my friends or you know, talk about a lot that, oh man, this movie was so good. This was so good in this movie, or that scene, it remains with me till this day. Nothing. I have already forgotten maybe 3/4 of the movie.
I've already messaged every girl I've ever interacted with about this movie, hoping that at least one of them will respond with the kind of warm, fuzzy love feelings. Because I'm so alone, dude. The point is, if you're someone who's ever been in love, if you're someone who has never been in love, if you're someone who's somewhere in the middle, this movie's for everyone. It's like the kind of romance that's so real, so raw, and I don't know what you're talking about, this romanticized romance. I mean, sure, it's great. I mean, romanticism is great, romance is great, especially when done well, like they are in this movie. I think the reason you didn't like this movie is that, oh, it's too different. It's like, oh, it doesn't have plot points or a three-act structure. It's just two people talking, and maybe you're like too much of a film noob to actually digest like the beauty, the genius of that.
Right. Shut the fuck up. So basically, I think the concept and the premise of this movie and the way this movie was shot was the only good thing about it. And
oh, you actually like it?
The only innovative thing about it, right? And I mean, credit to Linklater for that, because of thinking of something along those lines and trying to shoot like these three movies years apart and stuff like that with the same actors, correct?
Same actors. He didn't plan it, to be fair. He did this first movie. It was supposed to be a standalone.
Oh, okay.
Suppose.
I mean, kudos to him for all of that. But then it failed because of A, Ethan Hawke. Why is he such an Ethan Hawke fanboy?
What? I loved him in this movie.
I've tried to love Ethan Hawke in every movie, because one of the first few Ethan Hawke movies I saw was Training Day, was so good. And he was the loose link in that movie still. And because of that movie, I've always tried to watch every movie of his. And this just cemented it.
I thought he did an amazing job. I mean, the movie would work with some other actress other than Julie. Let's just call her Julie.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we calling her Julie if her name is Julie Duplay? I don't know. Maybe it's Delpy. Friend Julie.
That's the reason we're calling her Julie.
Let's just call her Julie. But this movie would not have worked without this like effortless charm, or maybe effortful charm, as charm is when you're 23 years old, of Ethan Hawke. I think he did a great job. I could see some other actress in her spot, because in a way it revolves around him and his chase of her, especially initially. But I could not see anybody else but Ethan Hawke pulling it off. And think about when he did it. His one movie role, I think, that was big before this was Dead Poets Society, where he was kind of a bit player. He was a kid. And then he just moved on and carried this movie amazingly.
I think Julie is the indispensable one in the cast. And Ethan Hawke, I mean, regardless of whether it was his first movie or second or third or whatever, it didn't feel natural. There were parts in the movie for the first 10 minutes, he felt super robotic. And every reaction of his felt really forced when they were in the train and talking and stuff like that. And at parts, that whole natural acting sort of came into play, but then it sort of went away again. I didn't get Ethan Hawke's vibe in the movie at all. I think Julie did actually a really good job. I kind of liked her acting.
Yes, the acting might not be as natural on the train scene, but that's fine. It plays into the character because it's just kind of starting off. I mean, you're not 100% natural, right? You're acting every time you meet a new girl. You're acting. You know, you're doing some level of fakery in whatever you say. And then slowly it withers away. It becomes totally natural, as you're even admitting in the middle of the movie. And that's really cool too. That's like an emotional character arc right there. As for the fact that it's not good, I mean, that's insane. Because this movie relies on every scene, every line being totally natural. The moment it's not natural, you don't buy into it. And I was like bought in the whole way. And another reason was that I didn't know Julie from anywhere else. And so I was able to treat her just as a character and not the actress. And I was like completely sold, man. It was so warm and fuzzy.
Stop saying warm and fuzzy. That's it. I think you've used our quota up for warm and fuzzy for the podcast.
All right, I want to get one more.
Fine, go for it.
No, not yet.
Oh, okay.
I'm saving it.
I thought you just got to say warm and fuzzy. My contradiction here is Julie's acting, Julie's line. I know the film relies on the script so much because it's basically them talking throughout the entire movie, right? So the delivery of lines is so important, and speech is so important, coherence and stuff like that.
I heard an interview and the idea was like, the moment you see them acting, it's all over.
Which was the case for me.
When? Julie, what moment?
I'll tell you specifically as well. So Julie's acting throughout the movie felt natural. Her dialogue delivery felt natural. It was as if she was actually talking to another human being throughout the movie, which was great. Ethan Hawke, on the other hand, dude, there's this one scene, I think they're in the church or when they're like really close together, like their faces are really close together, and they're talking about something again, like, that the dialogue is what drives the entire movie, right? And then they're talking about something really important, which is really close to their heart. They're opening up to each other. And whatever Julie's saying is natural. It's flowing. It sounds like she's actually talking to someone else genuinely. And Ethan Hawke, like a f***ing robot, is staring into her eyes without blinking. And his dialogue delivery looks like he's memorized a script and he's regurgitating it on camera. And that just threw me off so much. Like, it happened like 4 or 5 times in the movie where I was like, this guy is just reciting his lines right now. So, f*** him.
That's weird to hear. I mean, they barely had a script too. Like, they would rehearse dialogue. A lot of it, of course, is improvised and it feels improvised. Especially that scene on the tram, which I think by far is the best scene of the movie. It's a single long uncut shot. Like, you know, they couldn't have memorized all this dialogue. They're just talking. He's asking about her first sexual encounter and other things. And it's like, it kind of reminded me of The Graduate. You remember The Graduate? Have you seen it?
Right, yeah.
You know, the last scene of The Graduate when they're on the bus and they're just talking. And this was kind of the opposite of that. Like, in The Graduate, they're like, oh, f***. Like, what do we do now? And it's super awkward. And this, because of the way it was shot, it just made me feel like it was a complete opposite. It was two people just connecting. And Ethan Hawke in that scene, like this one moment that a lot of people point to, it's like when he wants to flick her hair away as she's talking, but he doesn't, and he makes it feel so natural. And then they just kind of talk. I mean, from what I heard, like the at least initial drafts of the script before the actors started getting involved and improvising and rehearsing, it would just say, scene in cafe, they fall for each other in this scene completely. And it would also say something like, this needs to be best scene in the movie. And then they would just like work and figure it out. I mean, I think we've spoken about the acting enough. So let's just transition into the script, as you mentioned. It's just genius what Linklater did. It wouldn't have worked if he hadn't collaborated with the actors in such a way to bring out this completely natural vibe. I mean, it's a real achievement. And this whole dialogue is plot thing. You know, Linklater really doesn't believe in this traditional 3-act structure and stuff. And he just manifested and put it on film. He just captured what it's like through dialogue to connect with someone. Because his view was that when you hear somebody talk about something in dialogue, you not only get to conjure up the image of whatever the person is talking about, but you also get an insight into the character. You get to know how they think by hearing how they speak.
I think, I mean, the script, obviously, because it's the driving force of the movie and the driving force of the concept of the movie, as in how it's shot and all, I think it was fine. I think I have more of a problem with the delivery of the script by the actors and how the natural feeling of the script was to be translated to film, but it couldn't be done because of Ethan Hawke's acting and all of that. Apart from that, Linklater, the concept, the script writing, I think he wrote the script too with someone else. It was pretty good. If what you say is true about how they sort of morphed the script from just those basic scenes and stuff like that. But there were so many other things about the movie that, I don't know, just felt forced because the whole point of the movie was to keep it natural and stuff like that. They inserted scenes into the movie to make that progression natural, seem natural about how that one night started from them being strangers to becoming close and then talking to each other and opening up and telling them their secrets and stuff. All of that's great, but then in terms of execution, I really didn't feel it, man. I actually like Linklater a lot as a director and a writer as well. And I've seen a bunch of his movies, not as many as you have, obviously, but I think this is like his worst movie that I've seen.
How much does this movie make you want to go to Vienna?
Not that much, because this movie is like, what, 95-ish? I don't know what Vienna's like right now, bro.
It's Vienna. It's probably the same as it was in 95. It's Europe.
Favorite actors in the movie, those two Austrian dudes who were in that play.
Why don't you speak German for a change?
Ein, zwei, drei, vier, fünf, sechs, sieben, acht, neun, zehn. Wie heißen Sie?
Those two guys were really funny because I thought like movie's going to be kind of like that. Like they're just going to meet these random people and have these weird interactions. And I'm glad it didn't end up that way. And that way they ended up being kind of the only just very naturalistic comic relief. Like they were so into their stupid ass play. And then in the end they mentioned how they didn't go to the play. It was a really nice callback too.
Right. And that guy and then the poet they met at the river.
Yeah, the poet was cool. Very European artsy type.
Yeah. And then like kudos, man, working for a living rather than begging.
Yeah, that's nice. I actually had a friend in San Francisco who used to do that. She used to write poetry in like this park where you used to get a lot of drugs. The sad thing is she had a master's in poetry. I mean, it's not sad. It's great. She's really cool.
Dude, that's practical application of what you learned. That's awesome.
I agree. That's more than what we are doing with this podcast over here. There's no engine.
I wish we had theoretical knowledge about this shit.
That's true. So Ethan Hawke's character is cool too because he's kind of a cynic, whereas she isn't. But then he's also clearly a romantic, which...
Ethan Hawke's a little bitch in the movie. If it would have been any other decent actor apart from Ethan Hawke in it, it would have been actually a very good movie. I would have liked it a lot.
Like whom? Let's hear it. Who would you like to see in this movie?
You know who would be good in this movie? Michael Fassbender.
What? The most intense actor out there.
I don't know, man. If Linklater would have done it himself, it would have been great. That's how bad Ethan Hawke was in this one. Dude, if it would have been f***ing Rajpal Yadav there, it would have been much better.
Rajpal Yadav.
That guy's dialogue delivery actually feels natural rather than, oh, my script se pad raha.
Why? Where did this come from? I haven't thought about him in 10 years. This is absurd. I just like the moments this movie creates, you know, like the stolen looks that they take at each other. Which is probably the most contrived part of the movie, but still, it's real, man. You know, that's how the world is. That's how, like, cute romances are. It's when they're, I think, in, like, a photo booth or a trial? Oh, sorry, a music listening booth.
That scene was so forced. I mean, them in the trial listening booth thingy, the record playing, them looking at each other, looking away. Oh, we're going to kiss. Oh, we're not. Smirk, smile.
And they don't kiss at the end. That's the best part.
That was so bad. That scene was the worst scene, according to me, in the movie.
I think you should be in the Wizard of Oz, and you should go to the Wizard of Oz, and you should ask for a heart. And I feel bad for any girl you touch in life.
What?
Not physically. Just come in contact with emotionally. Because she's not going to get anything from you. It's very clear.
Wow.
This movie is a great litmus test for women to understand how sensitive, emotional, and providing a man can be in life. And
that's
you have failed it.
That's such a crock of shit. The fact that a movie determines how emotional or how providing you can be just goes on to show that you're a f***ing pussy.
That's what everybody who fails this litmus test says.
Whatever, dude. Whatever. I really didn't... I think it was overkill, the movie. It was great in parts. It was the actress Julie was great. The concept of it, the whole one night in Vienna, was really good. But the movie failed at important junctures, which just completely deflated its ability to be good.
Did you like any of the interesting conversations from the movie?
Some of the conversations were great.
Name one.
Him telling her about seeing his grandmom through the hose pipe when he was a little kid.
Oh, right at the start. That's what got her
interested in him, right? So like stuff like that, whenever they're talking, when they were in that graveyard where she mentioned that, you know, the Elizabeth, the girl, talking about, like, it was great. All of it was great. But then whenever Ethan Hawke would try to say something serious for a long time.
All right. Before you bring up Ethan Hawke again.
He's one half of the movie, right? So if I don't like his entire dialogue delivery or 70% or 80% of his dialogue delivery, the movie's ruined for me, right? So you can't blame me for that.
And you're one half of this podcast and you're ruining this podcast for me because you're such a idiot by complaining about Ethan Hawke the whole time. So I loved two of the conversations you mentioned. Those were really cool. It also gave me really great strategies to pick up women, I feel. Just, you know, make up some story about watching a dead grandmom.
That's why all the guys who watch this movie have voted it 100% because they have like a book to go off of now.
Oh, so just because you're in a relationship, you don't need this advice. That's why
I would have never needed this because that's not the real me, dog.
Oh, dude, that's the whole point. You don't need to reveal a real you. You just need one night in a European country to make a chick fall in love with you. It's genius.
Probably Ethan has like a psycho murderer back home in the States, bro.
That brings up an interesting question, which I figured we would get to later, but I think now's as a good time as any. What do you think happens in the next two movies? Because I don't know. I have a bit of an idea. I read about it a long time back. But since you don't know, why don't you tell me what you're
going to happen? I'm pretty sure they meet up and it's the same thing one night together. And it's their part. It's their thing, like, oh, this is like my cheat boyfriend or my cheat girlfriend throughout my life. They're probably married, I'm assuming.
Jesus, what kind of cynic are you?
No, they're probably married, maybe in the second one or definitely in the third one or something, or like divorced or something. I just like, realistically, this would be the most interesting way this story could move forward.
I don't think that's what happens at all. I think I don't know.
Do they like get married and stuff? Is it?
If I was to guess, I would take a very optimistic route to what happens because this movie made me very optimistic about love. And I probably think they meet in 6 months. Oh, no, wait, the next movie is 10 years later. They probably met 6 months later. They didn't stay together. And then 10 years later, they decide that they were actually the ones for each other. In fact, it's interesting because at the end of the movie, he's like, when should we meet next? And she's like, 5 years. And I was like, I thought she was more into him than 5 years.
Typical European.
Typical European. Wants to play options for 5 years and keep this guy on the back burner. And then she's like, oh, it'll be an interesting sociological experiment. I was like, what was the point of all this fun stuff? But then she was just, you know, overwhelmed. She didn't know what to say. She didn't know where he was at. And when he says, wait, that's a long time, she goes down to a year, they go down to 6 months. And it's just beautiful. What a beautiful, melancholic, yet warm and fuzzy ending to this movie. And yes, that is my last time using warm and fuzzy.
Thank you. That's torture. If someone connects with each other, if someone connects with another person so much, and why don't they just like dive into the relationship or take it forward and see where it goes? That's so stupid. Like 6 months, wait, think about each other. Maybe
what kind of conservative thinking is this? It's fine.
It's life.
This is life.
You find someone you connect with so much, who you resonate with so much, who you really like, who you want to be with, and you're not with them. That's a movie plot, bro. That's a f***ing movie plot.
She's European, he's American, they're figuring it out. He's gonna take 6 months, he's gonna come back. It's beautiful, man. You don't know how to like savor the romanticism of life. You just want
Balls,
to be like,
they didn't even exchange phone numbers. What the fuck was that about?
What you're saying is the equivalent of saying, oh, when you're on the arranged marriage circuit and you meet someone, then fuck it, say yes. What do you want to keep looking with other people for? Just fucking go for it. Just be married.
Don't even throw the arranged marriage thing at me. You know that's not what this is about.
I know that you're a conservative, old school Republican version of an Indian.
Don't you dare say Trump. All right.
By the way, you have to give mad props to Ethan Hawke's character for at least having the sense to approach her in that place. Would you have done the same thing?
I don't know. Probably spoken, but not the whole, oh, let's get off. Yeah, I mean, like, they try to explain it about via his circumstance and what happens to him when he gets to Europe and what leads him to take that step. But no, I would probably not. I'd actually try to understand what the German dudes were fighting about, first and foremost. Because I know 1% German, so I would like try to put that to test.
Yeah, but I mean, but the German people aside, like, I was inspired by the gusto. Is that a word he showed?
So that's when you try to pick up someone on the metro, right?
Yeah, I mean, if I never come across any French women on the metro, but if I ever came across a French woman on the metro, I'd be like, let's just come out. I want to show you around Noida. Let's just spend one evening walking around Noida. Why am I hating on the place I live? But I was just impressed with the move, and I thought it actually is something that I will take with me, you know, going forward in the movie.
Right, buy a Eurorail pass, train around for like 2-3 months, wait for the perfect French woman to come, and it's just like,
I'm just waiting for going through a breakup that will force me to do that.
Right.
And before the breakup, I'm just waiting for a girl.
Right.
Who I can break up with.
Who goes to Madrid. And ignores you when you're there.
So what I learned from this movie is to get a girl, break up with her, go to Europe.
Right.
Buy a Eurorail pass, if that's still a thing.
I think so.
Just keep walking in the train till I see a chick reading a book. Strike up conversation.
No. You forgot the German couple fighting.
Oh, first find a German couple that's fighting. Then bring them along with me until I can sit them in a coach where there's also a chick alone.
Right.
And
who has to be French?
No. I'm not.
Oh, okay.
I'm not stuck up on the French thing.
Right. Okay.
She just has to be white.
Okay.
Because, you know, I'm going with the whole German vibe.
Right.
And, ask her to get off the train.
Ask her to get off the train.
With me. Oh, not just like shove her off the train.
Yeah. Best of luck with that, bro. Let me know if that pans out. I'll be super excited to hear what happens.
Low.
Yeah. But other than that, dude, like, meh.
100% on Rotten Tomatoes for a reason.
Because they're dudes like you. Because you're like, oh, bro,
I can't help it if I was born with some feelings, okay? You're like Hal.
Hal has feelings, technically. Programmed feelings, but feelings nonetheless.
Yeah, somebody forgot to program the love feelings into you, Hal 9000.
I don't know, man. This movie tried. I'd give it props to that, but I didn't feel it. No, not really. Nope. Not having that. None of that shit.
Funnily enough, I just finished binging the second season of Master of None. And there were a lot of similarities with this movie, whether intentional or unintentional. It's basically him falling in love with this like Italian chick. And what really struck me was how even 20 years later in Master of None, they were still playing this like cutesy, like, her second language is English, right? But she can speak English. And so this ability to teach her the second language, like she says the wrong word here and there, or she doesn't understand the right word here and there, it was genius. It was still working. It's like something that Linklater had just stumbled onto and Master of None actually used.
No wonder. I didn't like Master of None season one that much.
It's because you don't have no heart.
I mean, it tried, again, good show, very unique, I'll have to give it that, just like this movie, again, very unique concept in the way they try to show it, but I just didn't get a good vibe from the show, man. Like, it left me feeling negative rather than positive.
This is great. Just hearing this just reaffirms all my theories on why you don't like this movie. You're just a basically non-feeling person. Emotional stuff is not meant for you.
You know the difference between Master of None and this? Master of None left me overall feeling negative rather than positive, which is, I mean, I still would not rate that too highly. This movie left me feeling neutral. That's the worst thing possible. It left me feeling neutral. After this movie was over, I was like, okay. There are two more. Wow.
I can't wait to watch the other two more.
Go for it, bro. And don't even tell me how it was.
I think we've established what a tin man from Wizard of Oz you are, in much need of a heart.
Wow.
And this movie is awesome. I'm pretty sure everybody agrees with me on that. There's a good data point that suggests the same. And
stat whore.
I'm a stat whore, but also I'm a Before Sunrise whore.
Okay.
Why don't you summarize your thoughts on this movie?
No.
Oh, man. All right. I think I've expressed my love for this movie enough. But one thing that I haven't given enough credit to is all the beautiful quotes and dialogues that this movie results in. My favorite ones included media as the new form of fascism, which I totally believe. I'm not going to bring up Trump again, but there's something there. And why don't I end with my favorite quote from this movie, which is what Ethan Hawke says when he watches A Belly Dancer. Because I think it relates to this podcast. He says, everything interesting costs a little bit of money.
Except for this podcast.
Yeah.
So guys, that was this week's episode of Film Feud. I'm still so bored with that movie, dude.
We feuded. And now you guys, the listeners, get to decide. You can tweet at us at Film Feud Pod. You can let us know who you think won, which I think is very clear. That was me. Or you can let us know what arguments you might have made.
And don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you guys listen to podcasts at.
Thanks for tuning in.
Bye.